really a pleasure to be here this beautiful spring day, and I hope that it will stay like this at least for the next 2 days. So let me see. What I am going to talk about is mostly related to joint work with these people, all of them at some point at NYU in New York. And so let me explain why all these screens are here. So I'd like to show you the transparencies, like this one. Now this is very easy to see because it's exactly the same as the other one on the other side. Of course, you see a little bit of difference, namely that it is not so well visible than that one. So for this reason, I will show all of my transparencies on this screen, which is less visible. And don't worry if you don't see them well, because I will actually try to explain those things. And what is really important, and you have to remember for a while, with the exception of this transparency, I will show on the other side. And meanwhile, if I have to explain something, then I will try to use part of the blackboard. Okay. So before you would start paying attention, just I tell you the punchline, the moral of the story, so that if you are not interested in the moral, you can stop listening and you can think about your favorite problem and have a good time. So the moral of the story will be that I'm talking about geometric arrangements as the title suggests. So imagine, for instance, that you have an arrangement of spheres in d dimensions, but somehow I finitize the problem so that there is an underlying set of points. So, for instance, you can think of it in this way, that if even in the plane, you may think of having a number of points, and for a certain triple of points, you draw a circle. Of course, well, I don't know. And then, in this way, you finitize the problem, because you can think of that those triples for which I took a circle, those triples form what combinatorists call a three uniform hypergraph, right? A triple system. The moral of the story is that these triple systems, for instance, are very special, in this sense, beyond any dense arrangement geometric arrangements, spheres, or whatever, there is a structure theorem. And I'd like to tell you what the structure theorem is. One little technical remark, I said behind any dense system, well, for instance, one way of defining this dense would be, for this particular example, to say that for a positive proportion of all triples, I actually take a circle. Then this will be, in this sense, it will be a dense system of circles induced by n points. Okay, so enough of nonsense, and let me show. This generic problem, which I consider, and if I have to. So what is the problem? The problem is that we have an n element point set in the plane, and just like in this example that I tried to show, I can denote for this system, and let me sort of stick to the plane for this example, Fm of n I like the largest number with the property, so that no matter how I choose m disks, m circles induced by triples of this n element set, I will always find a point which belongs to many of the circles. So it's already an interesting question when I take just all circles induced by n points. So imagine that you have n points in the plane, take all n choose three circles induced by them. Obviously, sort of obvious, that you will find a point that will be contained in many circles, but in how many circles? You will see, if you haven't seen that before, that here actually the answer is some constant times n cubed, but what this constant is, I have no idea. I have no idea. So again, if you have n points and all circles determined by them, then you will find a point which is contained in a positive proportion of all these circles, but what this positive proportion is, I don't know, and I don't even have a good conjecture for that. Now, I mean, problems of this kind were asked by several people, perhaps in this generality or even bigger generality. It was explicitly asked in a paper by Chazelle, Ehlers, Brunner, Gibas, Hirschberg, Zeidel, and Shahir, and then in another paper revisited by Smoroginsky and Shahir in 2004, but there were other papers of that study problems of this kind too. Okay. So why would anyone be interested in such a problem? So let me just show this transparency for those who have never seen similar things. This is one very popular problem in combinatorial geometry is the number of halving planes. Actually, already the number of halving lines, to be honest, is an interesting unsolved problem. So the halving line problem is that you have again your n points, and two of them you connect by a line. You call this line a halving line if exactly, I don't know, half of the remaining points are on one side, half of the remaining points are on the other side. And the question is that how many such halving lines can you have at most? And this is a famous unsolved problem. We expect that the truth is only slightly superlinear, but the best known bound is n to the fourth third. And in higher dimensions, there are also all kinds of results. And in fact, in any dimension, this approach would work. So let me explain it now because I talked about two-dimensional problem. Let me explain this question, how it would sound in three dimensions. In three dimensions, of course, again, you have n points, and then a triple, you look at a triple, and a triple induced, you assume that the points are in general position. And for every triple, you can take a plane going through those three points. And that plane you can call a halving plane. In that case, there are three points on the plane. This is n minus half of the points are on one side, half of the points are on the other side. It doesn't matter if it is not an integer, then lower integer part, upper integer part. And the question is that how many such halving planes can you have? And then there is an approach that really comes from a paper of Aronov, Chazelle, Ehlers, Brunner, Gibas, Shahir, Wessel, 1991. This means that earlier than the papers I referred to before. Which is based on an old observation of Lovaas. The old observation of Lovaas is that if you if instead of this having planes, you consider having triangles, so this means that if there is a halving plane, then the corresponding 3 points you connect by a triangle, triangle being used. Then actually this system of triangles, you get as, of course, as many triangles as many halving planes you have, because in every plane you have a triangle. And these triangles have a very special property, that if you take any line in free space, it will stab a relatively small number of triangles, namely at most n squared. And then, of course, you can ask the generic question that, okay, this is the only thing we know. If this is the only thing we know, then maybe this already enables you to give an upper bound for the number of halving triangles, because if you have a lot of triangles, for instance, you have all n cubed triangles, then most likely you can find a line which will stab a lot more than that. So it brings you to the question that if you just take m triangles, m is any number, then what can you say, that you can always find a stabbing line which stabs a lot of them? And in fact, these people prove the bound, which is roughly apart from a polylogarithmic factor, is that you can always find a line which will stab at least this many triangles. This is, by the way, not the best possible, most likely, but this is roughly the best possible we know. So if you can find such a line in any system of M triangles that is stabbed by, that will stab this many triangles. On the other hand, from Lovaas's bound, we know that, forget about the constants, this is this cannot be bigger than n squared, because in the case of halving triangles, there is no line that steps more than that. Then from this, you immediately get a bound that m is at most n to the eighth third, which at that point in 1991 was the best known bound for the number of halving triangles. Since then, it was slightly improved by Sharif, Smorodinsky, and Tardos, but that's a different story. And clearly, this approach makes sense in any dimension, and it raises questions of the kind I indicated. Okay. So now, let me explain what I said before, namely that if you take all n choose 3 circles induced by m points in the plane, then you can always find a point which is contained in a positive percentage of them. Well, in fact, you can say that you can do better. Let me try this multimedia thing. Ha! That's it. So, the Boros-Füredi theorem. In fact, every circle induced by 3 points, of course, contains a triangle induced by those 3 points. And the statement is true already for triangles. So if you take m points in the plane, you look at all of the n choose 3 triangles induced by them, then you will find a point that belongs to 2/9 of all these triangles, at least 2/9 of all these triangles. So, for a second, you may stop and think about it, that what does it have to do with the previous problem? But of course it has something to do with the previous problem, because if you look at, for instance, the systems of triangles in the free space, and you take any direction, like this direction, and you project the whole point system and the triangle system and everything on that plane. If in that plane you can find a point which is contained in many triangles, then the corresponding line perpendicular to that place will stab all of those triangles. So actually, the three-dimensional halving plane problem in a way is equivalent to the two-dimensional problem of stabbing triangles. Okay, so two nines of n, two, three. This is a very strange number. So the first thing you may wonder that why it is two nines, and why I can show you an example, which is very easy to figure out and very easy to remember. You put n choose 3 points here, n choose 3 points here, and then choose 3 points here. Then n over 3, yes. Why did I say n choose 3? It's early morning, maybe I need more coffee. So, and you take all of the triangles that have one point from each of these classes. There are n over 3 cubed. This means that n cubed divided by 27 of them, and then miraculously, this is equal, I mean asymptotically equal to 2 ninths of n choose 3, so this is the right number, and clearly this point in the middle is contained in this many triangles, and the other triangles here sort of avoid this point. Okay, so this means that in a way it looks convincing that you cannot possibly get a bound better than 2 ninths of n choose 3, but why 2 ninths of n choose 3? Well, let me show this. There is a book proof for this fact, which is due to book. So it's book proof in more than one sense. And it is based on a simple geometric fact that if you have n points in the plane, you can always find three lines passing through the same point that will equipartition this set. Don't worry about integer paths. You assume that the points are in general position, and n is divisible by 6, doesn't matter. So you look at such an equipartition, and in this equipartition, you can immediately tell that there are lots of triangles that contain the intersection point of the three lines. Actually, the intersection point of these three lines will already be contained in that many triangles. Right? Obviously, so let me just look at triangles that I induced by. So what I do is that I pick one point from each of these classes. Then I will get a hexagon. I can find n divided by 6 to the 6 different hexagons. And the claim is that in each of these hexagons, there will be a lot of triangles. And out of the 6 choose 3 triangles, there will be a lot which will contain the center point phi. Well, for instance, obviously, if I take one point from here, one point from here, and one point from here, then it means that these three vertices of the hexagon will always form a good triangle. Similarly, these three vertices will also form a good triangle. And then, if you look at the picture, then for instance, you can notice that if you look at these four points and this triangle here and this triangle, right? So out of these two triangles, one of them must contain the center C. And if you take this into account, then you will see that every six of them actually induces at least eight triangles. Now, if this is the case, then the total number of good triangles that you found in this way is for each six of, and there are this many of them, you multiply it by A. But then, of course, if you found a good triangle, then it appears in many six tuples. So you can choose n divided by 6 points arbitrarily here, n divided by 6 points arbitrarily here, n divided by 6 points arbitrarily here. So you have to divide it by n divided by 6, so 3. And if I didn't make a mistake, this will also be too nice. Now this is a beautiful book proof, a beautiful construction, but of course, not of course, for those who know, this beautiful construction which makes the whole theorem so mnemotechnically easy to remember, this construction is wrong. This is the Borosz-Füredi construction from 1984. Gabriel Nivas, who at that time was a PhD student at Tel Aviv University, noticed that in this construction, actually, you can find points that are like, I don't know, 1/10 of a percent better than the center point. So if you go outside, then here somewhere you will find a point which is contained not only in n cubed divided by 27 triangles, but a little bit more. But nevertheless, the theorem is true and sharp, and the construction can be fixed, but then, of course, it's not so easy to remember. Okay. So, this looks like this thing completely settles our problem, and it's hard to imagine that you will find a better proof than the book proof, but actually this turned out to be wrong. Gromov came up with a proof of the Borosz-Füredi theorem and all of his generalizations, which is in some sense more natural and more general and much better than this book proof. I will tell you a few words about it in a moment. But before that, I just I'd like to reformulate the Borosz-Füredi theorem in a way perhaps